Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran, author of Owning It, The Confidence Kit and my new book, Naked, 10 Truths to Change Your Life, which is all about exploring the power of vulnerability. Available now in all good bookstores and some crappy ones too. Thank you so much for coming back to me for this episode. I'm so excited to share it. I sat down, well, virtually with the amazing Greg O'Shea, who you will know as the winner from Love Island. Greg is also a rugby player here in Ireland with Rugby Sevens, and he's a big social media superstar now as well. But he's a really, really genuine, authentic guy who has been through a lot coming out the other side of Love Island. We all know that there has been some mental health stories surrounding Love Island itself and the pressures that go with reality TV. I can't imagine what it's like to be dealing with. Well, Greg shares everything with me here. He's so open and kind to share his experience, and he also has some really amazing advice, and it's really well worth the listen. I hope you get something from it. I learned a lot from Greg in this, and I think he also learned a little bit more about the spectrum of anxiety that we can all dip in and out of from time to time. So do listen, subscribe and review and enjoy. Thank you, Greg, so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. I know that we've been meaning to chat for a while and you were very busy with your law exams, which I believe you passed.
It did, yeah. I don't know how I pulled it off, but I got half of my law exams done. So it's a little bit of a positive out of lockdown with nothing else going on.
Absolutely. Like, that's a huge achievement, something to show for lockdown. Whereas at the beginning of lockdown, there was so much pressure to like learn a new language or, you know, take on something new. And it's hard enough just kind of existing right now, I think, for a lot of people. So fair play to you for that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks very much. Yeah, I'd be kind of just kind of getting itchy feet. Like, you know, I felt like I had to do something. And I always had that in the back burner that I always kind of wanted to challenge myself and do the FE1 law exams. And I was like, sure, there's nothing else going on in the world at the moment with so many hours to burn. So I said I'd give it a crack. And luckily I passed half of them. So now I'm like, oh, I have to do the other half now, which is the issue. But I'm good bit down the road anyway, which is, I'm very lucky to have it done.
Do you want to like start practicing law professionally then? Is that the plan?
To be honest, Caroline, no. I don't actually have much of a desire for law, which is a weird thing. I just kind of did it in college just to kind of do a degree and I got it done. So I have my law degree and then I said I'd do the FE1s just to kind of challenge myself. Obviously, I was lucky enough to go on to Love Island and get that going and that kind of side of things. So like the new world of online stuff like Instagram and YouTube and all those brand deals and things like that, which is very lucky to get. So I've gotten a kind of taste of that world and presenting and things like that, and I have my rugby going on. So like that stuff's really stuff I'm really passionate about and I enjoy. So why don't I throw the kitchen sink at that, try my absolute best, and if that doesn't work out, then I can fall back and be a solicitor maybe.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, it's an amazing thing to fall back on. But to go from the madness of Love Island, I know you were only on it for a short time. And then, like you said, there are just all the opportunities coming at you with media, social media, all these kind of brand collaborations. And of course, rugby, to suddenly have it all switched off when the pandemic hit. Considering how busy you were, was that like a bit of a welcome rest for you?
Yeah, it was initially kind of a welcome rest. We were lucky enough in my year in Love Island that we got all the end of 2019 and the start of 2020 to kind of capitalize on it initially. I feel really sorry for the people that did the Christmas Love Island because they got nothing really straight into pandemic. But it was a welcome break. I feel like everyone probably felt like it was a welcome break, that the world has stopped and everyone was forced to take a break for a couple of weeks. But it kind of got to the stage now where I'm just very... I struggle to sit down and relax. I always feel like I have to be doing something. Even if I take like 2 days off, I'm like, all right, now what am I doing? What's the next thing to do? And that's just kind of what my personality is. So after a couple of weeks, I was definitely ready to get back to the real world. And we're not even there yet, unfortunately.
Yeah, oh God, no, I know. I think we thought it was going to be like 2 weeks last March. And here we are like facing into the next March. I know you said to me, you know, you haven't really experienced anxiety, anything like, I suppose, what I experienced, which was pretty crippling and, you know, stopped me from living my life. But I think we all have pockets of overwhelm and anxiety in our life. So I'm just wondering, with the pandemic, you know, we're all facing such a genuine threat. Has it ever gotten under your skin, just the fact that we're in this situation and being in isolation, how has that impacted on your thought processes and stuff?
Yeah, so the whole thing with anxiety is that I feel like I don't understand anxiety, and I feel like I'm mislabeling it, or I think a lot of people mislabel it and don't understand what it actually is. In my opinion, my personal opinion, I feel like maybe someone like yourself or a couple of my mates who say they go through anxiety and they have proper attacks, I can see it in them. I'm like, okay, there's something going on here that other people say they have anxiety and they don't seem to be having an attack. So I don't know. I feel like it's a very hard area to understand. That's why I'm kind of very nervous to talk about it, because I don't know if I do experience anxiety, or is it stress, or is it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, let's like figure that out, because I think for so many people, stress just turns into anxiety. That's what it was for me. You know, I wasn't going around having panic attacks all the time. It was stress that I just kept pushing against and ignoring. And it's like your body is trying to tell you, this is too much for me. This is like, we need to take a step back here. And if you ignore that for long enough, your body kind of turns up the volume on it. And then for me anyway, threw in these moments of panic and feeling like I just couldn't cope. And that kind of pushed me over into the area of anxiety. And you're right, like it is a word that's bandied about a lot. I think we kind of throw it around quite flippantly, but there is a spectrum there. You know, it's not, you're not just someone who suffers with it and can't cope at all, and someone who doesn't have it entirely. We all have a stress response, and that stress response has been put under the test massively at the moment, because we're all facing a very genuine threat that our body is trying to protect us against, you know. And then you throw in other anxieties, you know, like day-to-day stuff, like worrying about, well, how's this going to impact your career, how's this impacting relationships, and suddenly people who think, oh, I'm not an anxious person, or I don't suffer with that, feel a little bit like they're just, you know, barely treading water. So I think there's a whole spectrum there, I think, that we all sit on somewhere.
Yeah, that kind of makes a bit more sense to me now that you say it. I've never really kind of delved into the topic because I was so afraid about like offending people and asking questions about it.
Why were you afraid?
Because I feel like if I wasn't like empathetic towards it, and I was like, but sure, that's only kind of a daily stress. That can't be anxiety. When then I see someone who I know, someone very close to me who gets like, who it manifests physically in them, and they literally like can barely speak and they're freaking out. And I'm like, okay, there's obviously something different here between these two people. But you've just explained it to me there, that there's a spectrum, that like a minimal daily stress can be some form of anxiety, and absolutely freaking out, not being able to speak and talk could be anxiety as well. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the kind of daily stress. You know, there's such a thing as optimal stress and optimal anxiety, which I'm sure you've experienced, you know, before going on the rugby pitch, where it's like a little bit of stress to actually help you perform. But when we spend too long outside of our comfort zone, it can start to wear down your ability to be like rational and reasonable. So it just can very easily happen for people. I myself don't really like the idea of a label, like, oh, I'm someone who suffers from anxiety, or, and I know people do use those labels and it's fine. But like I said, for me, I'm just a person with a beating heart and a stress response. Sometimes in life it has gone way overboard and my body was trying to protect me in situations that it didn't really need to protect me from. And sometimes it settles back down and it's fine. And everything that you do for your mental health and your well-being is keeping you at that nice spot where it doesn't get the better of you. So we're all kind of interacting with it daily, but some of us are just managing it a little bit better than others. And for some of us, it just gets way past the point of being able to cope before we even know what's going on. So that's kind of it for me.
Okay, yeah, you're kind of making really good sense of it there now for me. So I'd say in my personal experience, in that when I feel myself getting stressed or worked up, or say, upset about like finances or relationships, or I have like certain things I do, little things that always like calm me down and reset me and help me go again. And I don't really let it prolong. It might be like for a couple hours and then I kind of go back to where I was. So maybe I've just kind of figured out as I've grown up, just ways of dealing with that myself. And I've never kind of let myself get to the stage where I feel like I'm about to lose it. You know what I mean?
That's amazing, but you have awareness. That's what another question I wanted to ask you was, I saw that you were on Twitter talking about, you know, how much stuff we learned in school, like theorems and bloody simultaneous equations that mean like jack shit in my life now anyway, and how useful it would have been to have had an understanding like what we just talked about there of even how stress can turn into anxiety. So I'm curious, was there something that made you become aware of your mental health, or is it just the kind of conversation happening in the public sphere that made you think, hang on, like, where am I at? How am I coping? Or maybe I'm coping and I didn't even realize I was.
Yeah, I said that on Twitter and I definitely offended a few people, but it's my really? Opinion from yeah, if you look through the replies, some people got very upset, being like, obviously I think there are people that are in the education system and teaching it, and they probably wrote the syllabuses, so they're probably getting a bit offended by my tweet saying I feel like sitting down and learning off poetry and theorems off by heart doesn't really apply to an everyday life. Like, it was so funny, I'm kind of going off topic here a little bit, but so my sister just had a baby, like similar to yourself. Yeah. And little fella, I unfortunately haven't met him yet because of restrictions. Aww. But he had colic, and my sister's only 26, and she was like, no one ever taught me how to deal with a baby that has colic. Like, she's like, I don't know what's going on. And then, so for instance, in my life, I it's so silly, like, but say the radiator was broken, I had to figure out how to bleed it, and then I had to change wiring in my lamp, and then I had to try and figure out to do my tax returns. And we were just kind of having this conversation. I was like, why doesn't anyone ever teach us this stuff? Like, and then that kind of leads to also stress and mental health and that kind of stuff. So, and then that kind of started in my head being like, I don't understand why school doesn't teach you everyday things that really help you in life when you get out of school into everyday life. So that's kind of what sparked it.
I completely agree. I'm only focused on like helping an individual person. Like, maybe you're feeling anxious, how can you help yourself? But something needs to happen at a wider level so that we all understand it, so we can kind of see it coming down the tracks before it gets to us. Like what you said about your sister there, like I've been in the exact same boat where I was like, holy shit, I was so prepared for giving birth, no idea what was about to come next. You have no skills, it's all new, and there's nothing happening in the education system for these very basic things that would make our mental health better. So you've obviously touched a nerve, but I completely agree with you and I think you're right.
Yeah, thanks for him. And a lot of people I've spoken to individually are like, you're so right, man. Like, that it is, like, they don't teach you these things. Well, from our experiences in school anyway, they didn't teach us that. Maybe it's starting to change now in everyday life. But even the fact that kids are at home now sitting in front of laptops every day, it's even more like prevalent, their mental health issues. So I feel like I kind of started being more aware of my mental health and what was stressing me as I got out of school. I don't know, maybe it's just the teenage years. I was kind of just away with the fairies and just kind of enjoying every day where stuff, your dinners are cooked for you, stuff done for you. When I got out into the real world and moved out of home, I was like, oh God, okay, what's going on here? And I kind of just developed processes myself that's kind of helped me deal with everyday life, and just kind of figuring things out and staying calm and asking questions where there's questions to be asked. Like, you kind of find out by talking to people that everyone really has the same kind of stresses and everyone's kind of worried about something. So speaking up about it has definitely helped me, and asking for help, which is great.
Yeah. And obviously you mentioned there having some close friends who have like been having a hard time, and to see someone like you talk openly about mental health is so crucial for people, you know, who are maybe thinking, oh, this doesn't fit with the idea of being like in my 20s, a lad playing rugby, that kind of thing. So it's really important to normalize it.
Yeah, 100%. And I get a lot of messages off young lads reaching out to me on Instagram being like, man, how do you do it? How do you stay so positive? How do you have all this going on in your life? And I try to get back to all of them as I can. But what I kind of annoys me about that is that, well, not annoys me, but say I have a very positive kind of image on Instagram, and it's very kind of, I'm trying to send out positive energy to kind of help people. But then people automatically think that's me 100% of the time, and that I'm just happy all the time and everything's good. So I'd really like for them to know that. And this is what I say back to them personally. I'm like, man, I worry about stuff every single day. Like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing in a couple of months. I get worried about relationships, my finances, jobs coming in. Like, for instance, I've absolutely zero job security at the moment. Like, my Instagram could crash tomorrow and I've no income coming from there. Rugby, they pay us below minimum wage to play sevens rugby, so that's not even a viable option for finances. Like, I'm doing my law in the background just as a kind of safety net. Like, so that's straight away just an example of, like, you know, I've no job security. So that's kind of a thing that stresses me, but I'm enjoying my life. So I'm just kind of going every day and getting through it. And so kind of the message I give back to these guys is, like, man, like, don't expect so much from yourself. Like, I know I look like I'm really positive and have everything together, but I don't. I'm just trying my best every day, and everyone can only kind of do that, really.
Yeah, I suppose that's just the impact of social media, and that people are foolish enough sometimes to think that what they see is the full picture. Obviously, a lot of people just share highlights, or like you said, you consciously want to share positive vibes to help people. But what's happening then, like, you just can't do anything right, because what's happening then is people thinking that's you full the time, and there's no nuance there. So do you feel like, to kind of balance that, do you feel like you need to share, like, look, I'm having a bit of a shit day, just to get people to, like, realize that you're a human being? Or would you rather just keep that privately?
What I've kind of tried to do myself is, especially in the current climate with everyone that being at home and more susceptible to mental health, I think I've tried to only kind of put publicly out positive stuff and not trying to bring people down with any negativity. But if people would kind of message me, I'll try and get back to them and give them my personal story. Or a great way to kind of get across that you're not good all the time is having those questionnaires on Instagram and let people ask you questions, and then you can publicly answer them. People don't know who's asked, but you can give your honest opinion, and it's like having a conversation with everyone. So that every couple of weeks kind of shows people that even though I've portrayed that everything's great and it's positive, it's not like that all the time.
So you mentioned there that you obviously just installed some really good coping mechanisms to keep you quite calm as you came out of your teenage years, but then you went into Love Island, which I can only imagine having that kind of spotlight on you, it's the last thing on the planet someone like me would do, because I get so much stress about thinking like someone doesn't like me. If I get one negative comment, I just fall apart. Like, I haven't built that strength yet, and I'm like nearly 33 and I don't know if I'm ever going to get there. But surely that had to, as fun as it was, and as a lot of excitement and opportunities came along, surely there was a bit of a dark side to having that many people's opinions in your face all the time.
Of course, like, there is, like, there's so many positives, but there's also so many negatives that just completely outweigh it or balance it out. Like, even before you get selected to go into Love Island, you have to go through so many different meetings with therapists, and they have to make sure you're mentally stable to go in. And I'd said, it's kind of a long story, but I'll go through it anyway. They got onto my Instagram and asked me to go to the interview. So I went to the first couple and I kept getting through the rounds. And then I got to the final interview and they offered me the starting lineup. So you go in the first day, and I said, lads, I actually can't go in. Like, I'm sorry, I have rugby commitments. Like, I can't do the show. And they were like, so why did you bother, like, coming this far, like, going to the interviews? And I was like, to be honest, I didn't think I'd get this far and you'd offer me a place. I was just doing it for a bit of crack, just to see what it was all about. So shook hands and I walked away. And then they rang me again a couple of weeks later asking me to go in. And I was like, look, I just can't make it work. I'm playing rugby until the 15th of July. And sure, that's only 2 weeks before the end of the show. It's not going to work. So they went away again and the show started. And then it got to about 6 weeks into the show and I got another call off them, and they were like, look, we're pushed a deadline for you and we'll fly you in when you finish your rugby. Can you come in like on the night of the 15th from wherever you are? So they flew me from France to Love Island, and I literally had I barely any clothes with me. Like, I kind of grabbed my roommate's clothes because I don't really have any that like nice fashionable stuff. So I had all his clothes, and then I went into Love Island, grand, flew across, and it was all so last minute. And because my head was so concentrated on the rugby, it was Olympic qualifier, so I was really focused on that. So it went from finishing that just straight over to into the villa within like 12 hours, like I was in the villa. So it was really like last minute, and I didn't really have time to kind of process what was going on. So that's why the therapist kind of got onto me, and she rang me and actually met me before I went into the villa and was like, I just want to make sure that you know what's going on here. Like, it was just like the fifth time I met her, and she was like, for the last couple of weeks, I know that you haven't been thinking about what's going to happen in this villa and what could happen afterwards. And she met me before going in to like sign off for me to go into the villa to make sure my mental health was in the right place and that I knew what was going to happen. And then I went in, grand, she signed off, let me go in. And you actually can meet with the therapist every day if you want, but you have to meet them like at least every 3 days just to kind of talk them through. So ITV do everything they can for you mental health wise, and people don't see it on the TV, But literally at least two or three Islanders every single day break down in tears and have to go out and see the therapist. Like, they just can't hack it.
So I presume when you're in there, you don't have social media. You haven't come out yet and faced the wrath of the public.
No, you don't have any idea what's going on. Like, you literally have only, that's your world inside that villa. I went in and I was like, they were all asking me questions. So what's going on in the world? How many followers do I have? Like, I told Tommy Fury that Tyson had won a fight and he was like, what? No way. Like, they don't have no idea. I told him who won Wimbledon. Like, they had no idea what was going on in the world. They're so, it's so secluded. And they're just, it's just the pressure of cameras and people. And you know, millions of people are watching you, but you don't know what they think of you. So I was kind of fortunate in the sense that I was in there for such a short period of time that it didn't really build up for me. And halfway through, I actually got to go home and see my family because, unfortunately, my grandmother passed away.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's not great, but look, that's life anyway. So, and they luckily enough let me go home to the funeral. I went home with two bodyguards and came back. So I realistically, if you kind of put it on paper, I was only in there for 6 days, got to go home and see my family, and then went back in for a week. And then was gone again. And my parents came in during the second week for the parents' day. So I was actually very lucky in a sense that I was kind of kept close to my family, my friends and therapists all the time.
What was it like though, coming out?
My whole world just got flipped upside down. Like, it was, you have no idea until you get out just how crazy the show was and how popular it was, which is great, but it's just like overwhelming.
And people must assume, like, if you choose, if you proactively go and put yourself on that show, there's sort of like an acceptance that you're now there for the taking. People can pass judgment. They can consume you, I suppose. Did you feel that?
Oh, completely. Yeah. People fully think they kind of own you because essentially they've made your popularity, which I can in some way see their point, but that's just not, it's just not humane. What, like, people be messaging me and on Instagram and they say, Greg, you should be using your platform for this. I'm going to appreciate you putting this on your platform and blah, blah, blah. Like, they think they own my platform. And when I, the whole thing kind of happened then that I decided that I was going home to what I was doing before I went into Love Island, like going back to my rugby and back to my studies. Because my thought process was, that's what got me onto the show. And that's what I've done in my life. And I'm not going to throw it all away just because I won a show and was on a TV for 2 weeks. So I ended up not staying with Amber. And that went down like a bag of bricks.
Oh, I can only imagine, like, because I suppose, like, when I watch reality TV show, and like, because I've been like glued to Hey You since I had the baby because I have nothing else to do, you think like you're in the room with them, that you're pals, you know, and you get so invested. What was the hardest moment for you, or where did you feel like, do you know what, this is going to tread into dodgy territory here for my own well-being?
So the only time when it started turning negatively for me was when I decided to go home to Ireland and not pursue the relationship with Amber. Like, I decided not to bring it to boyfriend girlfriend level because I was like, it's just not going to work. I have so much stuff going on back here. I'm trying to get to the Olympics. She's over in the UK doing her things. Everyone's watching her every step. There's too much pressure. Like, we barely know each other. We only know each other 2 weeks. And I just, like, if you think about it, it's like you going on holidays, meeting someone and having a really nice holiday with them. And then you go both flying home and not seeing each other.
And change your life forever, yeah.
And that's it. And the problem was just millions of people were watching the relationship. And I just decided, you know what, the safer thing to do now and the best decision for me and for her, because I couldn't give her what she wanted. I was like, I'm just going to go home and go back to what I was doing and try and take every kind of opportunity that comes around my life. And then obviously people didn't like that because, as you said, they get so invested and they feel like they know you and you owe them something. And it just, like, honestly, the whole thing just blew up and I was getting like death threats sent to me.
What?
People, like, crazy stuff, like people step by step telling me how I should go, like, it's very dark, but kill myself.
God almighty.
And when I started like blocking them and things like that, they started getting onto my family and messaging my mother horrific stuff, my sister's horrific stuff. My mates were getting messages being like, you should shoot your friend in the back of the head.
Oh,
like,
my
he's
God.
Oh my God, it was horrific.
Did it make you regret going on just because, I mean, you just get a taster of the absolute levels of craziness that exists in the world?
I never regretted going on, but I probably was not ready for how nuts people can be, like, and what people can actually generate just from typing on a keypad. Like, I was just young girls from Britain messaging me at, like, to like throw myself off balconies and things like that, like, into, like, oh my God, it's just, where are they even coming up with these,
telling you to throw yourself off a balcony?
Yeah, like crazy stuff, like telling my mom that she's giving birth to a little prick, like all this stuff, like,
oh my God. And you must have gotten some amount of like declarations of love as well from people. That could probably be just as scary.
Yeah, and then there's that side of it. Then there's people that would message you being like, look, I really appreciate you being so honest with and going back to what you're doing before. So it's a balancing act. And the thing was, if you're not kind of stable in yourself and have your own processes to kind of calm yourself down and have good people around you, that could completely
Oh,
just
I can imagine.
throw you over the edge. And for instance, we probably shouldn't get into it too deep, but obviously there's been a few deaths by suicide through Love Island show. So that's kind of just shows you that if you don't have your kind of your balance, it can really get at you. So I was lucky enough to have really close friends and really good family. And I can kind of, and a weird thing that I kind of say about it is that, so for instance, I've been playing rugby and been playing with rugby teams for my whole life, and locker room banter can get very dark and cut you very deep. So you kind of build a thick skin to slagging. And I feel like, because I've had that coming up and slagging with the lads and things like that, I'm kind of used to getting slags to a certain extent. But then that also bonds you and gets you really good friends. So like all the lads would come around me then and support me and things like that. So I re was really lucky to have that kind of environment around me. And I think that kind of really stood to me when this was happening. And like, say for instance, to put a stat on it, Caroline, like when I was moving home to Ireland, I had 1.7 million followers, or just under 1.7, and now I have 1 million. So that's 700,000 people unfollow me. Like that's the kind of figures of how pissed off people were at me that I decided not to follow the normal Love Island path. Like, but look, I'm happy myself and my decisions, you know.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. Burrow.com/acast.
And how, I mean, like, I get nervous. Like, if I go up in a couple of hundred followers, as much as it's kind of a little bit exciting, I'm always like, shit, that's a couple of hundred more people who might not like something you say today, or you might just put your foot wrong. I don't think we're supposed to have access to that many people. Like, back in the day, we would have our tribe, our village, you know, maybe you'd piss off one person, you'd get over it. You have the entire world there at the click of a finger. It's not normal. Like, I don't know anyone who could cope with it. So apart from just being surrounded by really, like you said, really solid mates and your family, and knowing, look, these are the people who matter, did you have to put boundaries in place? Like, do you read comments? Do you feel like when you go and tweet something that you think might be controversial and you know you're probably going to get some opinions, do you go looking at it? Because I recently, this is so trivial and this is so nowhere near on the level of what you're at, but I had heard that like someone had written these horrible threads that women take part in, where like these forums where they just bitch about people who like are in the public eye. And I had had a really hard time after I had my baby, and I was in hospital and I was sharing like, this is really difficult, and if you're struggling, it's okay, you know, I am too. And people were saying all kinds of nasty comments while I was still in the hospital, and I couldn't even thankfully bring myself to go and look at them, because I just thought, if I fall down that rabbit hole, I don't know how I'll get myself out. I can only imagine the level that you would be after something like that. Do you just put a block there?
Oh my God, I can't believe that happened to you. Jeez, I'm very
sorry. I know.
While you're laying in the hospital bed, that was all going on.
Yeah, it was like, did she just get a private room so she could go on Instagram? And
oh
Jesus,
my
she's not the first
God.
Person to ever have a baby and all this stuff. Talking about kicking someone when they're down.
Oh my God, I can't get over that. That nearly seems worse than mine. Like, because that's like, you're giving birth to someone. Like, what do they want you to do? Like, I'd be kind of similar enough to you. that's actually very strong of you, the fact that you didn't go and jump into that rabbit hole and get caught up in all that stuff. And the problem was, when all my hate started coming and all my death threats and all that stuff started coming, I did delve into it. And I'd be in the depths of comments on YouTube and Instagram and Twitter, reading horrible stuff about myself. And initially I was like, oh, I'm tough. It kind of doesn't really affect me, whatever. But then I noticed after a while, I was feeling really down on myself and I started getting like less confident and things like that. And obviously it was having like more of a subconscious effect on me, just reading constant negative stuff about yourself. Like, you are what you surround yourself by and what you read and what you see. So obviously it was getting at me. So then I decided just to cut it out, and I've stopped looking at negative comments and replies. Like, say if I start reading a message and I can tell that it's going to be a negative one, I stop it and I don't read it anymore. I don't look at my stats on my Instagram anymore, because I just know that it's like going down all the time, because I'm not giving people the Love Island content that they want. I'm giving them my actual life. So that obviously they're going to unfollow me because I'm not giving them what they want. So I've stopped looking at that, because it's just not healthy to be like, oh, Greg, 2,000 people unfollowed you today. Do you know what I mean?
I would literally feel like down in the dumps. And it's so hard to separate your sense of self-worth from those measurable metrics, which are such bollocks anyway.
Such bollocks is the right term for it, yeah. And then, for instance, my family and the closest people to me would talk to me and they'd be like, yeah, Greg, okay, 2,000 people unfollowed you today, but did you see 1,200 people did follow you? Like, so they're like, you've molded your brand and your personality, and you've showed your life on Instagram, and like the genuine people that want to follow you and support you and that believe in you are following your life. Like, so
yeah, well, they're there now because you're being as true to yourself as you can be. So, you know, you're gonna have to lose a couple of 100,000 who just want salacious, gossipy crap. So the closer you get to your most authentic self, I suppose, the less chance there is for anxiety there in terms of social media.
That's it, exactly, yeah. And to put it kind of in your context, then, when you were sitting lying in the hospital bed and giving all that crap off people, which I can't believe they were doing that, but I'm sure you were getting lovely loads of messages as well. And like, people were like, oh, congratulations, all that stuff. So it's kind of taken both of them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but like, you have to also be aware of the fact that like, we have, and I've talked about this in the podcast a few times, we naturally come with a negativity bias, and it's for our survival. We've been primed to hone right in on one negative thing, because back in hunter-gatherer times, if you failed to notice a threat or something negative, you could get eaten by a lion. So we've placed so much more importance on that because we think it's going to affect our chances of survival. And, you know, if something good happened in the day, like if you managed to hunt down a wildebeest and have a nice dinner, that was great, but it wasn't a life or death situation. So positives don't have as much impact on us, unfortunately, as negatives. And that's never going to change. We're hardwired to be that way. So I think you have to allow for that. I don't know anyone who wouldn't be impacted by that level of negativity. And then just realize that that's what's happening. That's the hardware you're dealing with. And I suppose just then try and nudge yourself towards something more positive or something that really matters to you.
Yeah, I actually read into all that, and it's very interesting you bring that up, because I was like, why am I so focused on the one negative comment in the middle of 100 good ones? And I can't remember who was a celebrity, but some celebrity was interviewed, some reality TV star, and they were asked the question, and they were like, I used to find myself replying to the one negative comment in the middle of 100 and not replying to the 99 other people that have said nice things to me. And I'm like, why am I giving my energy to this one negative person when 99 people are being lovely to me? And that really kind of resonated with me. And I was like, that's so true. Like, and then I've obviously read into what you've said there, and that it's just an innate thing that we kind of focus on negativity for a survival instinct. And that's probably what is so dangerous about social media nowadays, is that I feel so sorry for young teenagers that are coming up, and on social media is their life, like everything's on it. And it's so dangerous that they're just naturally going to go towards negative comments. And I'm kind of glad I just missed the boat and growing up with social media, because I think that's just such a scary idea. And I hope that humans will adapt and kind of get over that negativity thing. But as you're saying there, you don't think that will happen.
I don't think so. I think we'll probably just evolve, probably take a couple of 100 years, so we'll be long gone. But you were saying on Ireland AM that the further away you get from the experience of Love Island, the better you feel you are at kind of wrapping it up and putting a bow on it and saying, that was one experience and here I am now. Do you feel different now?
Yes, I do feel different from when I first came out of the show, just because everyone kind of recognized me walking down the street. Everyone wanted a bit of me for a few weeks, but I just knew that it wasn't like, there was no substance to it and there was no longevity for it. So I kind of was welcoming this kind of period of time when I kind of got a bit away from it and people cared about other people and other things. I'm not going to sit here and be like, I haven't taken opportunities from it. I've completely taken like certain deals, and I've gotten presenting jobs, and I've gotten brand deals, and I've gotten a platform now to speak up about things that I care about. So both sides have come from it, but I'm definitely kind of happy that the initial craziness has kind of worn off, because it's just, it's not normal for someone that it wasn't really kind of ready for it, you know. But I did accept it, and I did decide to go in there, so I'll take everything from it. Yeah.
And can I ask you, obviously the nature of the show is like romantic and stuff, and everyone takes a very like vested interest in your relationship status, then does it make you, and you don't have to tell me anything personal, but does it add a level, I suppose, of stress or anxiety in terms of approaching relationships now that you're out of it, because will the whole world want a piece of it?
Yeah, relationships are a weird one for me now, because everyone kind of wants to know who I'm seeing, what I'm doing relationship wise, because that's obviously what the show is about. Like, so that's why people kind of know me. So yeah, I've kind of been very private with that side of my life. And there was kind of something getting to something more stable before COVID came in. But obviously now restrictions got in the way and that kind of died off. So who knows what's going to happen when restrictions lift. I'll get back into the dating game and maybe try something.
But not even just people's opinions about the relationship, but even the person that you would start a relationship with has to, I suppose, know that this is going to come as part of the package.
Yeah, there's probably that side of things as well, which I kind of really haven't delved into yet, or haven't had the opportunity to kind of chat with, say a normal girl that I know from back home. If I started talking to her, like, that would have to come up in conversation. But then if I talk to a different girl who's kind of in the public eye, that would probably be an easier conversation because she's used to it. So we'll see what plays out. Like, I'm kind of just kind of doing my own thing at the moment. And when COVID restrictions lift, we'll see what happens in that side of my life, you know?
Yeah, well, you can't do anything for the time being anyway. Yeah. Come here, I wanted to ask you about rugby. So I did a podcast with Ian Madigan before, and he was very like you and saying, like, I don't really have anxiety. But I was like, no, you just are so good at managing it. Sometimes it's nice for people to hear from someone who isn't just like in bits, like me, like the rest of people on the podcast. And I'm only messing there. But with the rugby, and you talk a lot about the Olympics and everything, there's such a level of high achievement and perfectionism. If you don't hit that level of perfectionism, if you don't make the Olympics, are you able to separate yourself worse from that? Like, how is that going to impact you? Obviously, I hope you do, and you have every chance of getting there. But do you find that the rugby and the professionalism there helps you cope better in life outside of rugby?
Yeah, definitely. I think sport in general really helps you with kind of developing yourself and kind of coming up with those processes for dealing with like stress. For example, like Ian Madigan, like you mentioned there, he obviously has a really high level of stress to deal with being the kicker of the team. Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, performance anxiety is probably through the roof for him.
Oh my God. Like, think about that. When he's placing up a kick, like, there's hundreds of thousands of people watching him. Do you know what I mean? And he has to go through his process. So he's obviously come up with a way of doing that. But for me, we're kind of the same thing in a rugby sense, in a professional sense, because you have to be able to perform on the pitch with tens of thousands of people watching you, even more than that. So that kind of helps develop your coping mechanisms. And for instance, then before I get up in the morning now, I always have my process where I kind of do a stretch. I write down things I'm grateful for, I write down what I want to do for the day. And that really kind of just sets me up for the day. And I don't know if that's come from being regimented from training, or if that's just kind of something that came naturally, but I feel like they've kind of married nicely into each other. I feel like sport has really helped me in that sense. But also the other thing that to do with sport, especially professional sport, is that Ian would probably be the same, in that I really identify as a rugby player, and my whole life since I've been a teenager up till now has been so focused on being a professional rugby player and now trying to get to the Olympics. So I am probably kind of a little bit concerned about where my identity is going to come from when I finish playing rugby, if I don't get to the Olympics, if I don't reach my potential, which is probably a nervous area for me to be in. But that's just me being open and honest. And that kind of slightly happened to a certain extent so I used to play 15s rugby, and I was in the Munster Academy for four years. And like, I wanted to play for Munster rugby more than I wanted to play for Ireland. Like, it's just, I wanted to do that. That was it for me. Like, had posters on my wall, everything written down. I wanted to do it. And then I had a big accident on a bicycle in the summer of 2015, and I lacerated my Achilles tendon. It was a freak accident, and my leg was ruined, and it just didn't work out with Munster. I rehabbed for a year, and then I just obviously wasn't back. I wasn't like a working athlete for them, like, so and it's a business at the end of the day, so I had to move on, and the Sevens picked me up. So that was a really tough time for me, in that I kind of lost everything that I'd been working for a couple of years. And it just wasn't there for me anymore. And I was like, what am I going to do? Like, that's all I ever wanted in life. So I really kind of struggled to transition my identity into the seven side of things, and now trying to get to the Olympics, and now there's the Love Island stuff and things like that. So it's interesting to see where it's going to go in the next couple of years, because I couldn't even tell you what I'm going to be doing in a year's time. But I have a lot of options, I have a lot of things going on, and I'm excited to see what will happen.
Absolutely. I saw a quote that you said, something that was the best advice you were ever given, and it was control the controllables. And I love that. I'm like, it's kind of taken straight from stoicism, you know, where we have to let go of what we can't control, because that's where a lot of stress and anxiety comes from, you know, whether it's the pandemic or, you know, so we can't really control what happens to us, but we can control our reaction to it. Is that like a life motto for you, the control the controllables? Tell me a little bit about that. And how do you remind yourself of that daily?
Yeah, control the controllables is something my father said to me and my team when we were only a schoolboy team. And I remember he said it in a meeting we had before a match, and he was just like, control the controllables in relation to like only your prep and your skills and your prep for the match. You can't do anything about the opposition. And I kind of took that and I kind of applied it into everyday life, in that you can only control what you can control. Like, and for instance, there was an ex-girlfriend story. I had an ex-girlfriend, and she broke up with me like after 4 years over a phone call, and that was it. Gone, blocked her and everything. Couldn't get to communicate with her in any way. She was just gone. And it turns out other stuff had happened behind the scenes that kind of came out 6 months later, but I literally couldn't get in contact with her. She was gone. And struggling with the fact that I couldn't control the situation, I couldn't communicate with her, I couldn't figure out what was going on. I really got to a kind of a weird place, and the control of controllables kind of really helped me get out of that, and that I can only control my own life. I can't control what she's doing. And I kind of got back into myself and figuring out Greg and what Greg needs to do to get myself right. And I did that. Turns out 6 months down the line that she was up to other stuff behind my back, and I could never control that. So that phrase, control the controllables, really is applicable in today's life as well, with restrictions. You can only do what you can do for your own life, and you can't control other people or other things. Really.
I know, like, it's just definitely, you know, something to live by as we get older, and in every aspect of life. Before I let you go, Greg, you're 25 right now, are you?
I'm 25, yeah.
Oh my God, you're a baby. So I still think that I'm like 23 or something. I can't believe I'm actually like an old woman now, basically. An old mother.
Old woman, will you go ahead?
An old mother. An old married woman. Oh God. But come here, advice for a fellow 25-year-old male in particular who might be listening, because a lot of women will publicly say, love this podcast, you know, talking about anxiety. A lot of men will privately message me saying that podcast really helped me. So they're much more quiet about it, much more introverted about having any struggles. And I'm sure looking at you, like you mentioned earlier, seeing all that you've achieved, where you're at in life and your unyielding positivity, there'll probably be a tendency for people to fall into like a social comparison trap, to think that, oh, like, look at Greg and look at me. What's one thing you would say to them to help them change their perspective, or what's kind of parting words of wisdom you could leave them with?
There's definitely this kind of weird stigma in society that men aren't allowed to kind of seem to be struggling. Men have to be really tough and just kind of get through it and don't be emotional, which I feel like is slightly starting to change now, and men are allowed to open up and talk about and be emotional. So what I would say to a 25-year-old man my age is that don't put too much pressure on yourself. I was like, what I would do is I'd set the big goal where you want to get to, say in 5 years, and then work back from that. And what can you do this week? What can you do tomorrow to start doing baby steps to get to that main goal? And don't just be like looking at, for instance, me and be like, oh, I want to have what Greg has there. Do you know what I mean? I want to have what this guy has there. Like, you need to kind of concentrate on your own life and what you can do each day to get towards that big goal. And don't just be trying to jump straight away to that big end goal. It's about everyday processes. And the other thing is, be aware of your own feelings, your own mental health, and take breaks. Like, you're allowed to relax. Just because you're this big man that's supposed to be tough and going all the time and succeeding doesn't mean you're not allowed to take breaks, like, and treat yourself and relax and take time for yourself, especially in today's world. It's a tough world out there, and we need to mind ourselves first and foremost.
Greg, thank you so much. That's just such amazing advice. I think people will get so much from this podcast. I know you were a bit wary at the beginning about, you know, offending someone with anxiety, but I think hopefully you come away with a bit of better understanding of how to manage it for yourself, and even like the difference between a bad day and like getting to that point of it taking over. So I know a lot of people will benefit so much from this. So I cannot thank you enough for your time. I know you're super busy with all that's going on, even in a pandemic.
Yeah, no, thanks very much for having me on. I definitely did learn some stuff there. That whole thing about the spectrum, a lot of food for thought there, and I'm going to look into it a bit more, but I've really enjoyed this chat. Thanks very much.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.